see all our pretty faces and Daniel's, you can be sure to go to the YouTube channel and hit like and subscribe. You can also listen to the show on 1430 ESPN, the 1430 app, and the 1430 ESPN website, where you can also listen to Tony D's show. Show is Sportsline Bulldog Hour, talking all things Fresno State and more, hosted by Tony D on weekdays from 2 to 3. Also, you can listen to Paul Metters' show, the Central Valley Sports Report, on all those spaces from 10 a.m. to noon, as he talks about all things high school sports live from First String Sports. Should be a lot of fun hosting my very first show, but before we get to that, we have one other sponsor to rattle off, and that's Lee's Air Heating, Plumbing, and Roofing, sponsoring the Lee's Air Hotline, as you can call into the show at 559-320-1430. Again, that's 559-320-1430. So let's get into our Lee's Air weather check for right now. It's 81 degrees for Fresno standards. I feel like this is frigid after we've been hitting 100 degrees over the last couple of months. But we're going to get some rain later tonight. Thankfully, we're going to get some rain later tonight as it dips into the 60s. All right, so quickly, what we have on deck for you guys tonight, or on today's show, I should say, we're going to talk to our student athlete of the week, quarterback Aldo Rodriguez from Woodlake High School, as he had an impressive day last week for the Tigers. We're also going to preview the start of track play in high school football season. We'll talk about the MLB wildcard round that's actually going to be finishing up in a couple of hours, and talk about the NFC West showdown between the Niners and the Rams. And also, I wanted to give some quick thoughts on this WNBA controversy that's kind of been circling the news as of late. But before all of that, I just wanted to talk about October. And it truly, to me, is the best month for sports. To me, there's a little debate. And when you talk about the best month for sports, I think October is littered with great sports from around the world. You got the NFL, NBA and hockey seasons are starting up. Champions League is rolling along. College football is in full swing. And then you got the MLB playoffs, which to me, I think the MLB playoffs are the best playoffs in all of the four major sports. Even though that's not my favorite league per se, I think the MLB playoffs are the best. So I just wanted to start by asking Jorge, who is producing our show today, so thank you for that, and Daniel sitting here to my right, do you guys think there is no debate? Do you think October is like the best month out of sports? We'll start with Jorge.
October? Yeah, probably. Because everything combines, right?
Right.
Also, so it's good to be here with you guys.
Yes, you sir. Know? Good to be here for sure. What about you, Daniel?
I really think so, too. I mean, it's like nonstop. You know, every day there's something to watch.
Right.
You know, whether, like, during the week you could be watching, you know, MLB playoffs, even Champions League football.
Yeah.
So the weekend you got NFL, college football, all that sort of stuff. So I'm like, I love it.
Right. And honestly, like, the only other months I would say are kind of close. I think you can give a shout to, like, April. You know, you have March Madness, like, closing out in April. I think the NBA playoffs are starting up, or the late NBA season. But I think October is, like, truly the sports equinox.
If you're a sports fan, your favorite month.
For sure. You know, let's circle back to the topic of the MLB playoffs, and let's just run down what happened over the last 3 days in the world of baseball. Let's start with last night. Los Angeles Dodgers, they beat the Cincinnati Reds. They're the only team to sweep their wild card round. You know, I think Los Angeles really flexed their muscles with their five home runs in game one, and it was led by Shohei Ohtani. He had two blasts. Teoscar Hernandez had two blasts as well. Tommy Edman, he also went yard, and you really saw the offensive firepower that the Los Angeles Dodgers have in that matchup alone. Pitching, I think the Dodgers pitching also really showed out. Blake Snell played an exceptional game one. Yoshinobu Yamamoto, I thought he gave the Dodgers an edge, and I think it was big. I think it was actually the moment of the series when Yamamoto, he got the Dodgers out of a bases-loaded, no-outs jam in Game 2. Do you think that was kind of the defining moment of that series as well, for sure?
Yeah, definitely. I do think that. I mean, I think just in general, like, if anybody was doubting the Dodgers, like, with whatever problems they had during the regular season, I feel like everything for them specifically, that just goes away, because I feel like they enter a different mindset.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I think, you know, Cincinnati did show some fight in the eighth inning of both games. You know, game one, they had five runs off that bullpen. Yeah. You know, they loaded the bases in game two, but they really couldn't deliver. And I think this was the one matchup, I would say, was the first true mismatch or of this MLB playoffs. Like, out of the other wild card series, I think this was the one where I kind of expected it to go two games, right?
Yeah, I expected that too. Yes. The way the NL was set up, like, nobody else was really – I don't think anybody else was really going to get to the Dodgers like that.
No, for sure. And the Dodgers will be heading up and playing against the Philadelphia Phillies.
Yeah.
In the next series on October 4th. I think Shohei Ohtani will be starting for the Dodgers. And the way that the schedule is now laid out, you're going to have Shohei and Blake Snell probably for two games with Yoshinobu Yamamoto in the middle. So, Jorge, I wanted to come to you. Do you think that this Dodgers team is are you looking optimistically because of the offensive firepower that they have, or are you more pessimistic about this team because the bullpen is so egregiously bad for this team? Where do you stand on the Los Angeles Dodgers?
As a Giants fan, I stand on being pessimistic about them, you know. but if I do my as a journalist, I would say I'm a little bit worried about their bullpen, because that has been the trouble. However, this two nights it's been, you know, lights out for them. So they actually work really well. So I don't know. Maybe it was because it was like you said, a mismatch. I think that the Reds were probably the weakest of all the wild card teams, but. We'll see. We'll see what happens when they face, you know, a different team.
Yeah, so Philly, you know, I'm high on Philly because of their offensive firepower. I think that the Dodgers are going to have to be so good in terms of their offense to kind of counteract that. Now, obviously, this Philly team doesn't have Zach Wheeler, and that could be somewhere the Dodgers could take advantage of. But otherwise, I think that this is going to be a very tight series. Just looking at some of the other series, the other games – you just had one series wrap up. The Detroit Tigers have beaten the Cleveland Guardians. This is only one thing that I really want to talk about the Tigers. Tarek Skubal, absolutely amazing in his 14 strikeouts over 7 2/3 inning games. I think it's one of the most dominant performances that I've seen out of a pitcher in the last couple of postseasons. And I think he is that one guy that can propel Detroit past Seattle, who they will play in the next series. I don't know. Where do you stand on Detroit? I think that offensively they still have a little bit of wishy-washiness to them, in my opinion. But if they're going to have to beat Seattle, I think it's going to have to be through their pitching, because they didn't necessarily score that many runs until today.
Yeah.
You know? So where do you stand on Detroit?
I'm about the same, because I feel like it comes down, like, their offense isn't, like, as, like, you know, like the Phillies or teams like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to score as many runs. So it's going to come down to, like, whose bullpen can get worn down first in that series. Because
right.
As we saw, like, with today, I mean, they scored 6 off of, I don't know the pitcher exactly, but I think they scored, like, 4 off of him just in that one inning alone.
So right.
I think it'll mainly come down to the pitching.
Yeah, and I think going to this Mariners series, I don't really expect either of these teams to put up the scores necessarily, but I think the Mariners have got this in the bag. Also, went to Seattle for a Mariners game a couple months ago.
Yeah,
it's crazy because I'm not a fan of the Mariners, but that was the first MLB game that I had ever been to. Beautiful stadium.
Was Brian Hill pitching?
I don't even remember who was pitching at that point. We got there so late. It wasn't even funny. And then we also got the Cubs and the Padres. They are tied 1-1. This was the first game in Chicago for a playoff game since 2017. And I think the Cubs really rode that crowd in game one. Seiya Suzuki and Carson Kelly hitting back-to-back homers to fuel that 3-1 victory for Chicago really put them in the driver's seat. I think Manny Machado really did well in that game, too, to kind of flip the series. And let's see what the game is currently going on right now.
Yeah, it's 2-0 right now.
You know, as you check, do you have the score right now?
Yeah, 2-0.
2-0, okay.
Bottom of the fourth.
Yes, bottom of the fourth. Cubs are up 2-0 on the Padres. This is going to be a wild finish. I think that this was probably the series that I was looking most forward to coming into the playoffs this year. And I think that it has definitely delivered. Now, Boston and New York can definitely have something to say about it, because both of those finishes have been kind of crazy. But was this the most For Jorge, I should ask, was this the most talked about series in your opinion going into the MLB playoffs, or do you think you were talking about something else?
The Padres series we're talking about?
Yeah, the Padres and the Cubs, yeah.
I think the Red Sox series was probably, the Red Sox-Yankee series was probably more talked about it.
I think those two series, I think, clearly were the two more anticipated ones compared to their other two. So we'll see how this game finishes. I think both teams, their pitching is good. Was it Mason Miller yesterday in game two? Absolutely amazing. So we'll see how that game finishes. What did you say, Jorge?
No, I just want to say that both those series are probably from the both, because both teams or all four teams are pretty strong. So whoever comes out of that series are, you know, they're going to have a pretty clear, they're going to be favorite or at least, you know, competitive against whoever they get to go against.
Yeah. So yeah. And then we'll just wrap it up real quick with this Red Sox and Yankees series. Garrett Crochet played amazing in game one. Yes. Max Fried, right? He started in game one in the, you know, a lot of people were saying that Max Fried got pulled way too early. Mm-hmm. I can see where they are coming from. And Garrett Crochet in his postseason debut, 7 2/3 inning with 11 strikeouts. I think if Tarik didn't have the game that he did for Detroit, we would probably be talking a lot more about Garrett Crochet and his performance for sure. Then in game two, the Yankees, they came back. Ben Rice had an early homer, and then Jazz Chisholm really sparked that comeback for the Yankees. And so then after today, the show, 5 o'clock, we're going to have game three. I wanted to just go around real quick. Who do you guys think is going to win? Daniel, we'll start with you.
I mean, I'm a Yankees fan, so I'm obviously going to say the Yankees. But yeah. I think the game changer has been putting Ben Rice and Jazz back in the lineup because they weren't in the first game. And obviously those two were the game changers yesterday to obviously win that game. So I just think with them two in the lineup, they had like a combined 53 homers during the season. I think that's the offense we need.
Okay. Yeah. Jorge, what about you?
For the Yankees, a Red Sox team. Basically, I'm more of a Yankees fan, but at the same time, I kind of don't care. honestly, I think I'll go Yankees just because Aaron Judge is there, and also because Phil is a Red Sox fan, so
yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and go Yankees there.
Phil's gonna be so mad at both of you guys. Finally early.
No, he'll be okay with it.
Okay. Yeah, I think the Red Sox get this done. I think I think the pitching staff is gonna be able to get it done in this game. So that'll be at 5 o'clock. So that was our roundup for the MLB wildcard series. Almost done with the MLB. We'll have more reaction to those games tomorrow, because Friday there will be a break, and then we're going to get into the ALDS and the NLDS starting on Saturday. All right, when we come back, I'm going to talk with ESPN's Student Athlete of the Week, Aldo Rodriguez, coming up here on ESPN Radio 1430, the Valley's local sports leader.
Down to Georgia, he was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind, and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sewing on the fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on the leader.
Always excited on Thursdays because we get to talk with some of the best athletes in the Central Valley with ESPN Radio 1430 Student Athlete of the Week program, and we always get a lot of nominees with some big time performances. And we thank you all for participating in this program today. We have this week's Student Athlete of the Week from Woodlake High School, home of the Tigers, quarterback Aldo Rodriguez. Thanks for taking the drive up here, and how exciting is it to be a Student Athlete of the Week, and how are you feeling after a performance like you had last week?
It feels great, you know, to be nominated. This is a pleasure to have me over. I appreciate it, and it feels good to come out with a win, especially from last week's performance. we had a pretty good game, just played better football than the other team, and that's our goal every week.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Before we talk any further, let me just rip off this stat line that you had. Yeah, you put up last week against Corcoran in a 63-6 victory, 23 for 30, 285 pass yards, 5 pass TDs, no interceptions. That's always big. And then, oh, by the way, you said, let me get these legs rolling, 59 yards on the ground and rush TD. What were you seeing in the game? Was there something like leading into the game that you felt like you could take advantage of, or was it more or less just taking what the defense gave you? And then, Coach, what did you guys see going into the game where you thought Aldo could take control?
Yeah, I mean, we just game plan. We got film on them. We have film on teams every week.
Right.
You know, so we just taking what the team gives us. We see they didn't change too much of what we saw, so we kind of expected what we were gonna see, and we faced it, and so our game plan worked out, and we just executed.
Nice. And Coach?
Just like Aldo was saying, I mean, we studied film. The kids took it serious on Monday afternoon. And they went out, executed. I mean, and with a leader like Aldo, I mean, he's the example of the football team. I mean, the work that he puts in, his work ethic.
Yeah.
And the rest just follow.
All right. So this was actually a game that you guys lost last year against Corcoran, right? 24-21, where, you know, they came back and won. And then now come to last week, you guys stomped these guys out by like 57. Was there any extra motivation to get one back on these guys, or were you kind of just calm and composed and more or less thought it's just another game? We'll start with Coach.
There was motivation. Last year, we were co-champions. We lost
yeah.
We lost one football game, and it was to Corcoran. So there was a little motivation behind it this year. Aldo was on the team last year, so I think we were all on the same page, and they came out and did what they had to do.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, same thing. I mean, I was on the team last year, and, like, along with the other guys, it was kind of a personal game, you know. That was our only loss during the league, and they had taken our league championship from us. You know, we had to get co-league champs, and so we came with a little chip on our shoulder, and wanted to get this win back and prove to the league that we're rolling this year well as a team and we're putting in extra work to win games.
Is there any sort of like different perspective on that term, like from the coach's perspective versus like the players? Like are you guys as players together just saying something to fire yourselves up, and then coaches, are you guys trying to look at it from a perspective of like we got to win this game and can't get overhyped about this, overhyped trying to get the win and just make the main thing the main thing? Is there a difference for that?
I mean, yeah, we talk to each other. We'd be like, hey, like, this is what happened last year. Some of the guys knew. Some of the guys were a part of it. And so we're like, you know, we got to get this one back. It stung us last year. And so we came in with wanting to work on Monday like we do every weekend and take this one a little bit more personal and just come out with a win and execute better than the other team.
For sure.
As a coaching staff, I mean, weekly we come together. It was a little personal.
Yeah.
I think it was a little personal.
Yeah.
We were winning that football game last year.
Yeah.
Into the fourth quarter, late into the fourth quarter. We fumbled twice, and they scored both times and ended up beating us late in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I got a great coaching staff. They put in the work, and they're constantly working. You know, our offense coordinator's working with the offense. Our lineman coach is, you know, constantly with our linemen. They're having dinners together. So, I mean, the team is gelling, and it's a good atmosphere right now.
Yeah. So, Aldo, I'll come to you real quick with this. Where do you think this performance kind of ranks in your personal career? I know you had some big games already. Last season you had a big game against Granite Hills. You had 284 and 3 TDs. Also, last season you had a huge game against Orange Cove, right? That was 331. You had 6 in that game as well. And even into this year, you know, 5 wins. And in terms of your, you know, career at Woodlake, is this the best game you've had so far? Is this the best you've felt?
I feel like, you know, that's the goal, is to have a better game every single game. So, I mean, like, for this year, yeah, I think this is, I mean, stat-wise, is definitely the best game that I've had. Team's still willing to work. You know, I'm nothing without those 5 guys in front of me. You know, my line's putting in extra work all the time. Same thing with the receivers and the running backs. Everybody's coming together and executing. And so, without them, I mean, I can't be putting up these numbers and everything I'm doing. So, I mean, the shine gets put on the more of the skilled players, but
right.
I mean, those guys are really in there working in the trenches, and so yeah, I give a lot of props to them, and they're the reason I'm putting up these numbers. So I feel like, yeah, this was one of the best games I've had. year so far.
Yeah, so I want to just quickly go back to your junior year, which is was it your first full season starting, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so you know, you threw 2,096 pass yards, 27 TDs. You guys had 8-3, and obviously, as you guys said, that were co-champs of the league. You know, before you know, a loss in the playoffs. But like, what lessons did you take out of that season, and what was the biggest thing you worked on this off season to kind of improve?
I really just worked on my mechanics. You know, getting better chemistry with the team. We had a great chemistry last year, but it's just, you can always get better, you know. So I worked on better chemistry, working on my craft, understanding defenses better, and just willing to work, you know, preparing yourself more for a game. You know, that's the worst thing you can do is underprepare yourself for a game.
Yeah.
And you're going thinking about the wrong reasons. And so that's what the whole team is really doing now, more than we did last year. You know, we're all preparing ourselves for the game, so that we're not thinking of the wrong reasons, and we have the best game we can, just playing better football than the other team and executing at a higher level.
Yeah. And then for you, Coach, what do you think was the best thing that you saw going from last season to this season that improved in Aldo?
Just like Aldo said, I mean, he's really, I mean, I think he's grown. The game of football, varsity football,
yeah,
is fast.
Yeah.
And last year, I think it opened up his eyes a little bit as a junior. And this year, he's comfortable. He's playing the game. He's up to speed with the game. And again, he's a leader. What he says goes, the kids follow. And it's great to have a quarterback like him.
Yeah. So, you know, this season now, let's just jump to this year. I know you guys are scoring points on end. You guys had 41 against Sierra Pacific, 41 against Exeter, 56 versus Hanford West, and then obviously you guys laid 63 last week. You know, is this a record for your guys' school, the amount of points you guys are scoring? I don't know who would know that with your guys' school, but is there like a record you guys are trying to reach in terms of like points scored in total?
No, we're not really trying to reach any records. You know, we're just trying to play dominant Wood Lake football. I mean, we're not really looking at the stats, so we're not sure how many points Wood Lake has put up like this before, when the last time that was. But we do know that Wood Lake hadn't started 4-0 since 1981, they had said.
Yeah.
So when we were 4-0, which that was surprising, you know, and it was a good thing to see when they wrote that. It was kind of eye-opening, like, wow, we're rolling this year pretty well. And
yeah.
You know, it was just good to see that, you know.
For sure, for sure. Coach, I wanted to ask, you know, with a performance like that, how much confidence do you have as a coach in Aldo, and how much of the playbook can you kind of like open up for him when you see performances like this, and now you guys are going into, you know, the bulk of the season, the league play? Like, does he now, these type of performances, instill confidence to kind of open it up more and you know, make moves as we move on to down the season?
Absolutely. As the head coach, I'm the defensive coordinator, actually.
I see. Okay.
So I have an offensive coordinator, but as the defensive coordinator, I mean, it's I mean, we get to do whatever we want on defense, because I know that our offense is going to score.
Yep.
You know, and it just makes it a lot more comfortable for the defensive players on the defensive side. They are also playing their butts off. We're averaging 6.6 points a game. So, but definitely we feel that we can open it up with Aldo. We don't run him much, obviously. We don't want nobody to get hurt, but we understand he could run the football as well. So.
Yeah. So now you guys are heading into a league matchup against at Orange Cove, correct, next week?
Yes.
Or when is it?
It's tomorrow
night. Right?
Yeah. Night.
So you know, what's your mindset going into this game off the heels of a performance like that, and how do you kind of get back down to earth and like refocus to say, all right, I had a great game last week, but now we got to just get to the next one. What is your mindset
yeah,
in terms of that?
Just exactly like you say, you know, got to keep a level head, you know, keep down, keep working, and you know, just don't treat it too much, you know. Just got to play better football than the other team, dominate at a higher level. That's where our defense is also doing great, you know, averaging you know, holding point teams to 14 points a game at most, and offense is rolling. So I mean, just not treating it like any bigger than it is. Keeping our heads down, keep grinding, staying humble, and hoping to come out with the W every week. Our motto is to be 1-0 every single week.
No, for sure. You know, you hear that all the time in the pros, but you can definitely relate that to the high school level. And then, you know, we were just talking about baseball, and we were just like, you know, if your offense is scoring like crazy, your defense, you know, they have the that sort of momentum. Like, okay, maybe we can slip up here and there, but we still have the confidence to try and stop the ball on the other side. Yeah. You know, I was reading a little bit about your guys' season in the Visalia Times, and I saw, you know, first 5-0, 4-0 start in Wood Lake football history in nearly like four decades. When you hear you're making history like that right now, what do you think is the biggest reason for that kind of success at this point of the season?
Well, it's my fourth full season here at Wood Lake. So yeah. I just think in the last three, just kind of implementing our program and what we want and just the consistency. We got a weight program now going on in Wood Lake that the kids are in the weight room every single day. I mean, and I think they've just bought in, and the work ethic that's going on right now and the group of kids that we have, it's contagious. And I mean, it's an honor definitely, because Wood Lake, you know, that there was a lot of winning seasons in Wood Lake. So that was also an eye opener to me. But we want to be 1-0 every week. We don't overlook anybody. Records are outside, you know, we throw them out the window. It's everybody's 0-0, and let's see what happens after Friday night.
You're speaking of weight room. I also read something. There's this thing called the 1,000-pound club or something like that. You said you're part of it. What are your splits looking like right now?
Well, I mean, I don't know, like, I don't remember, but I mean, right. My bench is like, I think it's like 255. Squat is 375. Deadlift.
It's a big boy.
375, something like that. Something around those along those lines.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, that's where I'm at for the 1,000-pound
club. And that was, you know, did you put an emphasis on that during the off season, or was that that's just something that you've been doing all your life at this point?
No, yeah, I mean, my dad has got me into weightlifting since I was little, you know. Like 7th grade I started, but I mean, when I came into high school, I knew that it's a different ball game from elementary and middle school. So, I mean, I got to step it up, get stronger, get faster, and the weight room helps a lot. And our weight room coaches are doing very great at getting us stronger and faster in the weight room every day before practice.
Yeah.
And it's contagious. Everybody's in there working, getting stronger, faster, and it's showing on the field.
For sure. You know, you just talked about the speed of varsity football and, you know, how it's a little bit different from level to level. You know, as you guys have progressed, you know, talk to me about your relationship with Aldo and what is that relationship like, you know, even off the field? Like, how are you guys trying to mesh that relationship together?
I mean, Wood Lake's a small community. We have 600 students in Wood Lake. So, I mean, we see each other every day. we see each other in church. Yep. So, I mean, I feel that the relationship that we have is strong. And I mean, he knows that I'm there for him, and so
yeah, no, for sure. And you same?
Yeah, same thing. I mean, it's a small community, like he said, so we see each other around all the time. Like we said, we go to the same church, we see each other at church, along with other coaches of ours. And you know, I feel like I can go to the coaches for anything. If I need help with anything that they can help me with, I know they'll be there and help me. And our connection is good along with all the other coaches. You know, all our connections are very close, and we get along really well.
Yeah. All right. So, although I know, you do also wrestle, right?
Yes.
Or did you still wrestle
yes.
right now? Okay. So, like, I just wanted to ask, like, when did football become your favorite sport? Or when did football really become that sport for you? You know, everybody has all these sports that they play going into middle school, but then, you know, a lot of the times they decide on that one. And what kind of motivated you to go hard at football?
I mean, as a quarterback, like I said earlier, a lot of eyes are on you, and especially in a smaller town, you know. So I felt like as a quarterback, I needed to get, like, my skills better, be a better athlete, be a better teammate. And coming into high school is when I realized that, like, football was going to be my sport that I want to really work at. Coming from a small town, you know, Friday nights is always a big deal, bringing in a lot of fans and supporters. And so that's when I started to realize, like, I want to take this more serious and put in the work for it.
All right. Yeah. And then, so last question, what are your aspirations behind high school? Is it, you know, to play at the next level? And if so, you know, what is that process like for you at this moment?
Yeah. I mean, if God allows me, you know, I would like to play at the next level. Right now, I'm sending out film to college coaches, trying to get my name out there as much as I can, trying to play better ball every single week with my team. But I mean, none of that will be possible without my teammates. You know, it's all a domino effect.
Right.
You know, like I said in the beginning, my starting five linemen or whoever's in there protecting me, giving me the time to throw, my receivers catching the ball, running backs running the ball, and it's all a domino effect. And so if we keep doing that, it's a great look, and I'm just going to continue to try and get my name out there and send a film out, and hopefully I can go somewhere.
Yeah, you get more performances like that. Oh, I'm sure that they're going to start coming in. All right, man, it was a pleasure talking to you, Aldo.
Yes,
before we go, ESPN have, you know, made this comically large check for you. It's got your team's logo. It's got your name on it. It's got, you know, all of that. So you can put it wherever you want, above the fireplace.
All right. Thank you.
In your room.
It.
We also have, you know, a little bag right here. It's going to have a shirt in it, which is an ESPN Radio 1430 Student Athlete of the Week shirt. And then, you know, a couple of other gift cards and such. So, you know, also to put a cap on this, you know, at the end of the year, we have a Student Athlete of the Year banquet, which you'll get an invitation to. It'll be around, you know, June-ish time frame. We have that banquet. I went to it last year. It was really, really fun. And obviously all the student athletes of the week become eligible for Student Athlete of the Year, where the winner earns a $1,500 scholarship. So you'll be in the running for that. It'll be a great celebration of all our students of the week.
Perfect.
So,
thank
so
you.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Hey, thanks for coming on. Thanks,
appreciate
Coach, for
thank
coming
you.
On. Thanks
you
to our great
us.
Sponsors for our Student Athlete of the Week campaign. So enjoy. Appreciate you, Aldo, for coming through and talking to us on the show. Good luck rest of the year. Stay healthy.
Sure.
And maybe talk down the road.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep. All right. Don't go anywhere. Beyond the Bench. We'll be back after this short break. You're listening live from Fashion Furniture on ESPN Radio 1430, the Valley's local sports leader. Leader. That was a great interview, I'd say, with late quarterback Aldo Rodriguez. Great kid for sure. All right, I wanted to just quickly cap this hour off with this controversy that's been happening in the WNBA. I know this is not necessarily a league that we talk about, but I just felt like this was something that had caught mine, and I wanted to, yeah. What's up?
Hey, just can you put up your mic up just a little bit? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, because you sound really low. That's just what I'm saying. But, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, as I was saying, this WNBA thing that's been going on, it really caught my eye. Not necessarily a league that we talk about all that often, but, you know, we're on the precipice of this WNBA finals, so congrats to the Aces and the Mercury. But we had the skating press conference opener by star guard and arguably the best player in the WNBA right now, Nafis Collier, where she had some remarks about Kathy Engelbert, the WNBA commissioner. You know, she started talking about how Kathy has one of the worst leadership, and she has the worst leadership in the world. She really pointed to kind of two core issues that have been happening with the WNBA, and that's, you know, inconsistent officiating that she says undermines the integrity of the league, and also, you know, player compensation and revenue sharing, which has been a topic of discussion for many years with this league, and arguing it's negligence that. Nafisa was arguing that negligence, like to stars like Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, driving record growth, yet remaining stuck on these rookie deals that are worth less than $100K annually, is just wrong. So she also accused Engelbert of dismissive comments, including, you know, she said that Caitlin Clark should be grateful that she plays for the WNBA, and that the WNBA is the reason that she's having all these off-court earnings and you know, the league's media rights deals. So. It's crazy because, you know, if we're just saying from a WNBA perspective, this is a player of the caliber of like a LeBron James or the caliber of a Stephen Curry in that league. You know, you have a former player that is at the caliber like a Nafisa Collier saying these things. I think it's certainly something that we should take notice of. You know, the league as a whole has been booming in visibility and valuation. You know, they doubled their revenue last year, or excuse me, from 2019 to 2024. You know, they expanded teams. and they're kind of fueled by these new generation of stars that are coming in from college, like an Angel Reese, like a Kalen Clark, and a Paige Bueckers even. And despite the growth, players are still limited to only like 9% of revenue share, which I think comparing it to the other big four leagues, which are all near about 50%, I think it's a disparity that is certainly to be talked about. In pairing that with officiating controversies, it's really created tension between the league office, even as the WNBA has positioned themselves as a growing league. So right now, the league's kind of facing some crossroads. Players are openly calling for change in officiating and officiating standards, and also demanding, you know, some equity in terms of the revenue sharing. And I don't see how this is going to be resolved. I think this will go to a lockout for the WNBA because of the amount of things that are happening in the amount of things that they're asking for in the WNBA. And I wanted to kind of just pose this question, Jorge, like, first of all, do you guys still think she should be a commissioner? And is this a trivial matter, or do you think this is like serious enough that she should resign? You know, because I have heard a lot of people saying that she should resign.
Well, I believe that it really gets up to the players, but it's difficult when you if you're part of, you know, something and all of a sudden it changes like that. But I'm not sure. It's up in the air, really, to be honest. Yeah.
No, for sure. And, you know, I think to avoid something like this to happen, the transparency needs to be good between commissioner and the players. And that's clearly not what's happening right now. I don't know. I think there are a lot of people calling for a resignation. And at the end of the day, if there's enough backing by the players, I think it could be a real possibility. In my personal opinion, I think this is a stain on the upper tier of WNBA management. And, you know, to me, I don't think that can be fixed until she is removed. So, and there's been talks about if she's even going to be at the WNBA finals trophy ceremony. You know, the commissioner's always usually there. I don't know if she'll be there, but I know if she is out there, she's going to be there's going to be a lot of boos for her. So I don't know how that is going to work out. All right. That's all for hour number one. Felt like it went pretty smooth. when we come back, we're gonna be talking about football and a lot of it. So stay tuned as we roll into hour number two next on Behind the Bench. You're listening to it live on ESPN Radio 1430 Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader.
He's got the knowledge.
Because once again, I have to come on air and talk about how right I am once again. In anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guests.
20th head coach in Fresno State history here, Matt. It's, is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last five, 6 weeks. But super excited to be here.
Phil Bonatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
And welcome back to Behind the Bench here on ESPN Radio 1430 Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Rolling along into hour two. Thanks for everyone tuning in. Guys, we have a football game today. Always great to have football on my screen, but not so great with the amount of injuries that are ravaging my San Francisco 49ers as they head south to SoFi to battle Los Angeles. Daniel, Jorge, just off the top, what are your emotions heading into this game? Because I clearly have some that I'll talk about in a minute. Jorge, since you're a Niners fan right there with me, what are your thoughts going into this game?
Emotions. Talk about emotions. It feels like we should have like two or three losses already, but we only lost one. So I feel confident. Because this is the same theme that we had on week one, I guess, or week two. I don't know. I feel like this team could make a win. I know it's a tough team. It's a tough environment, but I think we could do it. I think we could win it.
All right. All right. Daniel, you're the neutral here. What do you think?
I think I expect it to be a back and forth type of game.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know. I personally have the Rams over the Niners, but I will say that both offenses have still been good, especially the Niners, considering everything they're going through still.
Yeah.
I know last week was a fluke with Brock Purdy not being able to throw a ball, but I think Mac Jones will
do something.
Yeah, he'll do something.
The reason why I said emotions is because I am emotionally invested in this team, and emotionally I am very depressed about what the 49ers are going through right now. You know, just some big storylines going into this game. I think the quarterback situation for San Francisco is a underrated storyline. Brock Purdy is sidelined again with this toe injury, and I really think that with the history of injuries that the 49ers have had at, well, just all positions in general, I think that this has the ability to linger for the entirety of this year. And if that is the case, I think that is a big blow to the 49ers' aspirations to get to the playoffs. But hopefully he recovers. I don't know. I don't trust this training staff because of the amount of injuries that are piling up for this team. But, you know, Mac Jones, he gets the start. I think Mac Jones has been serviceable. You know, his sack rate is nearly double Purdy's, which is pretty bad, you know, which means whenever – you know, Purdy is really good at getting out of sacks. You know, the pressure rate allowed by the San Francisco 49ers offensive line is a lot. And when you're facing up against a good defensive line like Jacksonville had and a good defensive line like the Rams have today, I think it is imperative that the quarterback is able to evade that. And Brock Purdy is clearly a better player at that than Mac Jones is. So that's the biggest drop-off that I think we'll see in this specific game. I think another storyline going into this game, that Rams passing attack versus this Niners secondary. You know, Matthew Stafford has leaned heavily on Puka Nacua and Devontae Adams, who account for 2/3 of his throws, and I mean, rightfully so. Like, those two guys are studs. San Francisco secondary, I think, honestly, has been pretty strong so far. They have a couple of young guys. Upton Stout, I think, has played very, very well. He had an interception that was called back for a PI. I don't know where the PI came from. But I digress. But yeah, I think the secondary has been strong. Lenore is still there. But this is going to be their toughest test through the air yet, right? I think that would you say Puka Nacua is like the offensive player of the year so far right now? Like,
yeah, I would say that. Yeah. I mean, just looking at his stats right now, I think he's on track to, what, almost 5K yards maybe?
Yeah, he's
Well, not 5K. I'm being 5K. I'm over.
Yeah, 2K.
Yeah, 2K.
Yeah, so
I'm the quarterback.
Right. But it's basically what happened with Cooper Kupp during that Rams Super Bowl run. It's Matthew Stafford hyper targeting his number one wide receiver, and Puka Nacua is so good at that. I think Puka Nacua, I would say he is my offensive player of the year right now, if you had to ask. I think that you can make a case for McCaffrey, but I think McCaffrey has not had the rushing success like he has in years past because of that offensive line. I think Jonathan Taylor's another guy that you could point to. But, yeah, for me right now, Puka Nacua is offensive player of the year. Another big thing. This is – I alluded to it earlier. I think the Rams' pressure against this Niners offensive line is going to be the biggest reason why I think the Rams can be a really, really tough matchup for this 49ers team. Byron Young for the Los Angeles Rams, he's like the league co-leader in sacks. You still have Jared Verse on the Los Angeles Rams defensive line. This team generates a lot of pressure. You know, they generate at a top five rate without blitzing much, which is how you win games on the defense. Yeah. How you can shut. If you can only rush four, you can get to the quarterback. That is the way to success. You don't even necessarily need the talent necessarily on this in the secondary. If you can rush four, I go back to in 2019 when the San Francisco 49ers went to the Super Bowl. What made that team so good? You know, I think the secondary, you know, yes, they had Richard Sherman, but I wouldn't say that their secondary was nowhere near the strongest part of their team, right?
Yeah.
It was Nick Bosa. It was Dee Ford, you know, DeForest Buckner, and Eric Armstead. And those guys really challenged quarterbacks. And the passing offense for that was really, really good, you know. I think that's where the Rams have really built themselves to be a contender late in the year because they have this defensive line.
Yeah.
Also, the Rams have won three straight against the Niners, but the San Francisco 49ers are 2-0 in the NFC West. Just, Daniel, talk about, like, what is the importance of winning your divisional games, and do you side on the side of the 49ers? Like, those two wins that they had against Arizona and Seattle are going to balance out anything that they do in this stretch, which is really, really tough.
Well, I think I still do think divisional games matter more than any other type of game, just because obviously it goes into your placement, especially considering if you win the division or not.
Right.
But I do think this is the stretch of the season that'll define what the Niners can do so far.
Yeah.
Just like last week, you had your loss to Jacksonville, and so like I do feel like the Rams are playoff contenders, if not already going to be in the playoffs. I do believe so.
Yeah.
So I feel determining to how today goes will determine whether or not like you could consider this a playoff season or not for the Niners.
No, I definitely agree. And I think that the biggest thing that I got out of those first three games wasn't even the injuries. I think winning those divisional games was so big for this team because of the stretch that they were going to go on at this point of the season. That's why I really wanted to win that Jacksonville Jaguars game, because I think going 4-0 in a stretch where now you have the Rams, you have the Buccaneers, you have the Texans, who have an insanely good defense, and then you have the Falcons in there as well. Mm-hmm. And I think those are four tough games, and then it kind of eases up. I think if you could have perfection going into this Rams game, I think it was great. Personally, I think 3-1 is fine, but now with the amount of injuries that they have, and I'll list off the injury report right now, and it is vast for the San Francisco 49ers, but the amount of injuries that they have right now, I think it's very difficult for me to see a path until those guys come back. Just, again, going over this injury report, San Francisco, Brock Purdy is out with a toe injury. It's the same toe injury that was bothering him after week one.
Yeah.
Ricky Pearsall and Jawan Jennings are both out in this game. Ricky Pearsall has a knee injury. Jawan Jennings is out with an ankle and a rib injury. I don't know if you saw the play on the two-point conversion.
I don't think I saw it.
Okay, Jawan Jennings got absolutely smoked in the ribs during this two-point conversion. And, I was like, as soon as he caught the ball, because he still caught the ball.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big play, Jawan, right there. I knew he was going to be out for this Thursday night game. Jordan Watkins is also out, our rookie wide receiver. Robert Beal is out. C.J. West is still questionable. And then you still have the IR with George Kittle, who's projected to return week six. Nick Bosa, obviously out for the season. And then Spencer Burford on IR. Los Angeles on the other side, their injury report, you know, Rob Havenstein and Tyler Higbee both are doubtful for this game. Akella Witherspoon is on IR, but that's really it. Otherwise, they have all of their main players going into this game. I think when we look at this game, I just wanted to touch up upon what the big matchups are going to be as we look forward for this Thursday night. On the Rams offense versus the Niners defense side of things, the Rams offense has been predicated through their passing game. They're eighth in pass effectiveness, but this 49ers defense has been pretty good. In the passing game terms, they're 10th in effectiveness. And I think the big matchup obviously is going to be Puka Nacua versus Diamador Lenore. Do you think who do you think is the cornerback that you think could actually cover Puka Nacua right now? Cause I honestly, I'm hard pressed to find any.
Are we talking cornerbacks right now or quarterbacks?
No. Cornerbacks right now, obviously. I think PS2.
Yeah.
I think that's the one guy that I would have, like, certainty that I think I would match up on Puka, and I'll be fine with that.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anybody else out there. Jorge, I don't know if you could point to a corner that you would feel comfortable with playing against Puka Nacua right now, man-to-man, but...
I wouldn't doubt Jalen Ramsey still.
I don't know. Jorge, is there anyone you can think of or no?
I'm thinking.
I mean, it's hard because I don't think there is many out there, right? And I think Diamador Lenore and Upton Stout, both of them are going to have their work cut out for them. in this matchup. And, oh, by the way, you got Devontae Adams on the other side, who is, like, a completely great X receiver as well. Rushing-wise, I think that it's interesting that the Rams have kind of switched over to this outside zone run scheme. You know, they had predicated their run game on all of these inside runs. They're gonna hit you at the offensive line. They have all these big offensive linemen, and now you have teams that have been drafting to try and go against that. And Sean McVay has kind of just flipped it on its head and been like, no, we're gonna run some outside zone this year. And even though it's not been as effective in the game, I still think Kyren Williams has had a little bit of success on the ground this year. I think the biggest matchup in this game is going to be Kyren Williams against Fred Warner. You know, the change in this Rams offense to switch to this outside zone running scheme is going to test these linebackers for the San Francisco 49ers. I think Fred Warner is going to have to be everywhere today for the Niners to stop this rushing attack for the Rams. So otherwise, if that doesn't happen, I think you can expect a big game out of Kyren Williams. What is your thought like on these linebackers? Do you think they can get it done today? Because I think this is one of the better linebacking duos in the league, in Dee Winters and Fred Warner.
Yeah.
So do you think they can get it done today?
I do think they can get it done rushing-wise, but I still think the Rams are always going to lean on their passing game more than anything.
Yeah. No, for sure. Dee Winters is the one guy. He got burned on that touchdown against the Jaguars where Travis Etienne had that long touchdown that was like 60-something yards.
Yeah.
And he was kind of responsible for that. And even though I do think that this linebacker duo is really, really good, I don't know. It's a lot on them. If they can show up, and I know Fred Warner can show up. That's why I bought his jersey. That's why I bought his jersey like a couple days ago. I think that if he can show up, then I think the Niners have a fighting chance.
Yeah.
To you know, score the points that they need to, because I think it's going to have to lean heavily on their defense. And if we flip it to the other side, 49ers offense, that is, against the Rams defense, you know, the Niners offense, we already stated, just ravaged by injuries. But Christian McCaffrey is going to be the guy that they have to lean on in the passing game, I think.
Yeah.
I think when you lose Ricky and Ayuk and Juwan, and Kittle, you know, it's crazy that I keep talking because I didn't even say Jordan. But when you lose all these guys, I think Christian is going to be the guy that you have to lean on. He has been so good at pass catching this season. But that's also because the running game has just not been going. This is one of the worst teams in terms of run game effectiveness this season. They're 31st in the league. They're still the only team that has not had a rushing TD.
Yeah.
That is a shocking stat for a Kyle Shanahan offense that was built on running the football for years now. And that is that is predicated on the offensive line not being there. Like, you're not drafting offensive linemen. And maybe that's probably what they're going to have to do going into the next draft. They have to get a replacement for Trent Williams. He's aging at this point. He's going to retire soon. You've got to get some offensive line help. But in the passing game, I think the one place that the 49ers can hurt the Rams is in that passing game to Christian McCaffrey and targeting against these linebackers. And so with Christian McCaffrey in the fold, I think that's the one player that you can lean on. You still have Kendrick Bourne, but you know, this linebacker versus running back matchup in the passing game is going to be the only way that I think the 49ers can win this game. I just wanted to end this argument, and this talk, I should say, with some grades that I wanted to give both of these teams heading into this game for the first part of the season. I'll just go around the mics here. What grade would you give the Rams this season so far as we've reached the quarter point of the NFL season?
What's the record right now?
They are 3-1, and their only loss is against the Philadelphia Eagles on inexplicable field goal block.
I'd probably give them maybe B+, A- around there.
Yeah.
I will say they blew that game against the Eagles, like, definitely. Yeah. But other than that, they've been pretty good. I still do. Like, if I had to consider one team that's for sure making the playoffs, I would probably say the Rams.
Yeah, Jorge, what grade are you giving the Rams for their four games this year so far?
Yeah, I definitely give them a 7.5. You know,
yeah,
it's not. I don't think they're like an elite team yet, but they're definitely, you know, a high team. I want to see them get more wins, especially on in their own division, and see what comes out.
No, yeah, for sure, and that's why I gave the Rams a B plus as well. I think the Eagles' loss was very tough, but realistically, this team should be undefeated. Let's call it what it is. But especially this year, special teams is such a big thing. That was just a tough way to lose that game. I'd like the effectiveness on the ground game to kind of go up a little bit with Kyron Williams there. But you know, it all takes time. All of these changes in schemes are going to take time, and I think that last win against Indianapolis, that was a good win.
Yeah.
And so that's where I'm going to land firmly on a B plus. All right. And then the 49ers. I'll go first on this. I think the wins have occurred, right? We're 3-1. And if the Niners didn't really have the sheer number of injuries, I think I would probably grade this season a little bit higher for them. And they will get a lot of their players back in the latter stages of the season, and I may be more inclined to give them a higher grade, but I'm going to give them a B-. I think the two victories in the division is the reason why I still would give them a B. But, yeah, I don't like the outlook of this team, even as a fan, because there's only so much you can do with backup options, and for how long are we going to have them. So I'm going to give it a B-. Jorge, what do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you. I think that it's difficult to know, but overall, I mean, I think that the B minus is pretty much what they deserve. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I'd probably give it a B minus too. Yeah. Like, the way I'd grade it is obviously like how what they've done under the circumstances they've gone through so far, and I think they've done pretty well handling it so far.
That's another reason why I think there's not many teams that can lose your starting quarterback, two receivers, a tight end, a D end, and still be two games above 500.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it all plays out. Both teams heading in 3-1. I think that this is a big game for the Rams more than it is for the 49ers, because the Niners are already 2-0. So,
yeah.
And the Rams, I don't think they've played a division opponent. They played three games against the AFC South.
Yeah.
And so besides the Philly game, I would probably say this is probably their toughest opponent. No. Indianapolis, I would say.
Yeah.
Indianapolis at full strength was a better opponent. But nonetheless, a tough opponent for the Los Angeles Rams. All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, I'm going to talk about track play starting up, as we have three great matchups on the horizon for high school football. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back with Behind the Bench here on ESPN Radio 1430. Behind the Bench here on ESPN Radio 1430 Fresno. And before I start talking about Central Valley High School football, I just had to add a little something in here talking about some sports history. Obviously, we didn't have a show yesterday, but yesterday, 122 years ago, was the first ever World Series game between the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Boston Americans. And, you know, in the illustrious 122 years since, I wanted to ask, do you, Jorge, have a favorite World Series moment? And, you know, I'll just start off with mine. I think I had two that are really embedded in my mind. Obviously, baseball isn't something that I watched a lot growing up, but I've grown to love over these last couple of years. I think 2016 World Series Game 7, where the Cubs played the Cleveland Indians at that time, Cleveland Guardians now. I think that game is forever and embedded in my mind. That is a legendary game that had so many amazing moments. And then I think also last year, Dodgers and Yankees game 1. I know that's like recency, but like Freddie Freeman hitting that walk-off home run at the end of the year as the Yankees blew that lead. I mean, that was an insane moment. What a game that was as well. I'll always love Freddie Freeman for that. And, Jorge, is there one World Series moment that you would say has really stuck out in your mind as we have the MLB playoffs going on right now?
Ooh, I got a few of them. I got a few of them, definitely, that I remember. One that I remember as a child really well, it's where the Florida won the World Series with was it El Duque Hernandez or his brother? One of the two. But definitely it was one of those things where you're like watching on TV and can't believe it's happening because it's really happening out, you know, and it's history because it was the Marlins, I think at that time, Florida Marlins, they were, you know, a brand new franchise and nobody really thought they were going to do anything. And when they went all the way to the World Series in 97 or 98, somewhere around there.
But, you know, expansion teams low-key, like, have a really good history. You know, we've seen it in the MLS. We've seen it in NFL. Like, the Ravens quickly got to the Super Bowl. And I think people doubt them. And so that's really a story that is along those lines, right? The Marlins not being a franchise for as long and just getting that done, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Being a Giants fan, I remember the 2002 World Series because... Yeah. I really wanted them to win that one, but it went the Angels' way, you know, with the rally monkey and everything. And, you know, I got my revenge in 2010 as a fan, right? And then it was good times. I do remember 2004 Boston finally getting theirs.
Yes.
That
yes.
was, you know, that's historic stuff that happens. And then I also remember when Chicago, when it wasn't the World Series, but it was a playoff run. I think it was the NLCS or something like that, where the guy tried to catch the ball and it hit him and he ruined it out, and then the Cubs lost. I don't know if you remember that. I can't remember the guy's name, but it's very popular. It became a thing for years after. People still remember it now, and I don't think that guy has ever gone back to the stadium.
Would you say the Red Sox win or the Cubs win was kind of more of a triumphant moment, in your opinion? Because, like, obviously, I wasn't watching baseball at that time. So what do you think? Do you think, you know, the Red Sox winning in 2004 after all that time, or the Cubs, you know, winning in 2016?
They were very similar, but I feel like the Red Sox, just the way they did it and against who they did it, you know? Because they had to beat the Yankees to get to the World Series. And I think the way they did it in 2004 was just different. And it just felt like they had it, like everything was going their way. But the Cubs, when the Cubs did it, you kind of felt like, the Guardians were, you know, almost there. And was it the Guardians?
That time they were right? But they're like 3-1, you know?
Yeah, and you felt like they might have a chance, but yeah, I feel like I feel like the Boston one was a little bit more different.
I might be there with you. I think the Boston run itself was a little bit different, but that Game 7 for the Chicago was truly insane. All right, so
you know what?
Let me
just one more that is really in my mind. 2001. After 9/11 and all the Yankees were doing things, that Arizona team kind of stole it from them.
Yeah, that was an insane moment as well for Arizona, I think. Or no, was it Oakland, right, that went to the World Series that year? Or was it Arizona?
It was in 2001, Arizona won it.
Arizona won it, right, okay. Yeah, so... Yeah, that was definitely a great World Series moment. All right, let me get into this central section, this track season that's starting up. We have three huge games. We have one game today. We have two games tomorrow. Today, the Thursday game, starting at 7 o'clock, we have the top two ranked teams in terms of max prep, Central East versus Clovis North. I'm going to start, you know, Central East. I saw them in week one of this year. They are 4-1. They got a big win against Inglewood. That was a really good team, but then went on the road to Grant, had a little bit of a hiccup at Grant, lost 26-42, and then have racked up three quality wins over these last couple of weeks. They had a 44-20 win against Turlock. They beat Edison 55-17, and then Liberty, at Liberty, 35-33, always a tough place to play. I think The team is highly talented. They've had some great performances from Jelani Dipple, their quarterback. He's 67% completion percentage on the year, 15 pass TDs. He's only thrown three INTs, 1,300 yards. I think it's been a great year for Jelani Dipple, you know, on the ground and in the air. I mean, he's been able to get it to his guys. Brandon Smith, the running back, he's a senior, 63 carries, 592 rush yards. He's averaging 9 yards a carry. Like, that is insanely impressive with 8 rush TDs on the ground. And then also, Bayon Harris, 31 catches, 696 yards on the year so far, 10 TDs. I think in this game, it's clearly going to be this trio of Dipple, Smith, and Harris, and they are vaunted. And these guys make defenses look like toast. they look at defenses like I look at my dinner. Like, it is just all gas, no breaks for this team. They are just ready to feast. And, you know, when you combine a highly accurate quarterback that spreads the ball well and the amount of yards this team creates, it is insane. So their offense is going to clearly run through those guys. And then Bayon Harris obviously also doing it well on the defensive side of the ball. Clovis North, they are 5-0. They're the only true undefeated track team left in track. They have wins against San Joaquin Memorial. They won at Redwood, destroyed Central Valley Christian 53-14. They had the game that I went to and watched them was the San Ramon Valley game, where they won 43-14. And then beat Frontier in one of the craziest games, Paul Metters was saying, one of the craziest games that he's ever experienced for Friday Night Lights, as Clovis North beat Frontier 41-34 on a last-second touchdown by wide receiver Tyree Sams. You know, Clovis North was leading in that game for a long time, and then all of a sudden Frontier is coming back, and then they tie the game, and then we have the Clovis North offense just find a way to get a touchdown late. This Clovis North offense, you know, they are a run-heavy scheme. They deploy an elite running back in J.R. Cruz, who has 84 carries for 775 rush yards this year, 8 rush TDs. He's also averaging 9 yards a carry at 9.2, and that's the main way that they're going to run their offense. And for a guy that's young, as young as he is, he's a sophomore, it's great to see how good he is and how good this offensive line is, because they can open up holes and open up gaps for the running game. Defensively for Clovis North, their front seven, they can fly sideline to sideline. I think that they have a lot of upside on this team, and this big matchup is going to be predicated on their secondary as they face Bayon Harris and company. So that is definitely a game that I'm going to be looking forward to. I may be there. I don't know. We'll see what my evening plans are after I go to the gym. But, yeah, I might go to that game and see how that game plays out. Also, big game, Clovis High versus Buchanan. Clovis High coming into this game 4-1. They had a huge win against Central Valley Christian at the start of the year. Big win against Salinas that I got to saw them play. Their only loss was at Frontier. It was a 16-point loss, tough game. And then going to Los Gatos and pulling out a victory, I think, really turned the tide for this team. You know, after the loss, you thought maybe they would maybe fall off. I like their defense a lot, but now they're allowing 40 points on end. You really thought that maybe this is not the team that we thought they were when we got into Salinas, but they recovered really well. Had a big win against Los Gatos, big win at Bullard, 35-0. And I think Deegan Rose is playing some great football. 71% completion percentage. He's thrown for 1,200 yards. He's got 14 pass TDs and no interceptions. I think that's kind of what separates him. He doesn't make that many mistakes. And even though this wide receiver core doesn't necessarily have, like, the one guy, I think they have such a group of players that can hurt you down the middle of the field. James Caruso, another player for Clovis High that I really, really like, 60 carries for 426 rush yards and 7 pass TDs, but he's also doing it on the other side of the field. He's the leading tackler for this team. 56 total tackles on the year for James Caruso. So I think this Clovis D-line is lethal in pass rush, and they have multiple guys that can rush the passer. If they're humming, I find it very difficult for any team to find a passing game against Clovis High. But they have let up points this year, as I said. 2 games where they let up 40. And that's where, if you can have a quick passing game, attack on the ground, it can work. But offensively, you know, for Clovis High, they arguably have the best quarterback in track with Deegan Rose, who has excellent vision, threads the ball really well in the middle of the park. So I am also excited for this game. Now, the only team – let me talk about Buchanan real quick before we get to the third game. Buchanan, 5-0. They were 4-1. They did have a loss at Bakersfield, but the game as a loss was flipped. I think it was due to an ineligible player, I believe. I'm not 100% sure on that, but yeah, so their L at Bakersfield was flipped to a W, and then they've won ever since. They beat Kennedy, won at Edison, had a good win against Liberty, and then Paso Robles, the game that I went to, pretty dominant win. Not much that I could take away from that game because Buchanan was clearly the better team in that game. But I looked at their defensive alignments, looked at what their offensive scheme is looking like, and they have a sophomore quarterback in Tommy Devaney, 66% completion percentage, 952 pass yards on the year. He's clearly the least experienced quarterback of all of the quarterbacks in track, but he definitely has the arm to sling it. And when you have running backs like Gannon Sever and Carvell Wafer, both who are doing it on the ground and in the air, I think that's going to help the quarterback out a lot. And defensively, I think this Buchanan side, they fly. Front seven is very fast, very good at going sideline to sideline. They have some good players. Russell Devaney he's got 6 sacks on the year. Ethan Barak, he's got 32 total tackles. Donovan Dunmore, he's got 2 INTs. So there are a lot of good players on this defense. But the one time I watched them, the one concern I had was their secondary. I thought their secondary did get caught lacking a couple of times, and maybe in this game they tighten up. And I'm going to be interested to see how they will tighten up in this specific game. I couldn't take a complete look at them, but what I did see out of this Buchanan side, their defense played a lot of nickel, so that's 5 DBs on the field. It didn't stretch them too thin along that front 6, and they have a pretty good front that flies around. As I said, the secondary, I would like to see it tighten up, especially now that they're going up against Deegan Rose, who is a great quarterback. Offensively, as I said, relying on that heavy run game, having 2 shifty running backs, including, you know, Sever, who has a twitchiness that I like about him. I think they can supplement this with some intermediate passing game from sophomore quarterback Tommy Devaney, and this could really work out for them in this specific game. So, big game on the horizon there. And then, obviously, Clovis East versus Clovis West is going to be our game for Friday Night Lights this week. Pat Hill and Paul Metters are going to be on the call. I'm going to talk about this game a little bit more in depth tomorrow as I have Paul Metters coming in. And we'll discuss, you know, the battle of the two of the best quarterbacks in the Central Section, Duke in and out. You got 4-1 Clovis East, led by Jamie Spurgeon. You have 4-1 Clovis West quarterback, J.J. Howard. I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Also, a quick update. We I know we put a post on our social media that said it was going to be at La Monica, and our pregame was going to be 7 p.m. But it's going to be at Veterans Memorial.
Yeah.
And it's going to start at kickoff is going to be 7 p.m. But our pregame is going to be 6:45.
Yep. So, once again, pregame 6:45, kickoff 7 p.m. It is going to be Clovis East versus Clovis West at Veterans Memorial Stadium, not at La Monica. Some other big matchups that we have around the Central Section. Lemoore is going at Tulare Union today at 7:30. Sanger is going to play at Bullard in a matchup of 2 and 3 teams tomorrow at 7:30. And then Kennedy at Delano. Delano is 5-0. Kennedy going there at 4-1. So big games all around the Central Section. All right, well, first day on the job. Not so bad so far. Let's wrap things up. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back here on ESPN Radio 1430. All right, Welcome back to Behind the Bench on ESPN Radio 1430, Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Wrapping up this show as we lead into Thursday night football between the hobbled San Francisco 49ers and the Los Angeles Rams. All right, little reminder. Little reminder for our schedule for the rest of the week as we're about to go. Let's see where it is. There it is. Okay. Tomorrow, 2 p.m. It's going to be Sportsline for on 1430, and then I'll be back on Behind the Bench at 3 o'clock. It'll be a 2-hour Behind the Bench on 1430 before we get into Clovis East versus Clovis West at La Monica for Friday Night Lights against Paul Metters. It's Paul Metters and Pat Hill on the call for that game. Saturday, October 4th on 1430 at 10 a.m. we'll have the Central Valley Sports Report with Paul Metters. And then after that, we'll have NLDS and ALDS action on 1430 and 790. Games and times are subject to change. So we'll have the NLDS on 1430, and then we'll have the two ALDS games on 790. Sunday, October 5th on 1430 at 930, we're going to have Raiders and Colts. And then on 1430 at 5 o'clock, it'll be Sunday Night Football between the New England Patriots and the Buffalo Bills. On 790 on Sunday, October 5th, we'll have Game 2 of the ALDS. Again, times subject to change. Monday, we're back to a regular schedule in terms of Sportsline Bulldog Hour, 1430 at 2 o'clock, and then 3 o'clock Behind the Bench for 2 hours again before it's Monday Night Football, Chiefs versus Jaguars on 1430 at 5 o'clock, and we'll have Game 2 of the NLDS on, again, teams and time subject to change on 790, capping it off on Tuesday. It's Sportsline from 2 o'clock, and then 1430, we'll have a 3-hour Behind the Bench starting at 3 o'clock with ALDS Game 3 on 790. All right. Let's go to the Daily Spread, brought to you by Chukchansi Gold Resort and Casino. When you aren't trying your luck with your teams, try your luck at Chukchansi Gold Resort and Casino. Fantastic place to go and get your casino and football fix as well. Today's spread, we're going to go to the 49ers versus the Rams game. As I pull that up, Jorge, do you have a prediction? Do you have a prediction on who's going to win the game today?
A prediction of who's going to win tonight?
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead and say the Niners are going to win by 3.
Say that again?
Niners will win by 3 points.
Niners will win by 3, okay. The line, the spread for this game, it's Rams are favored by 8.5 points. Now, obviously, the Rams are at home. They're taking Mac Jones and company into account. Do you think 8.5 is a little high, or do you think 8.5 is just about right for this game? Well, I mean, obviously, you're saying the Niners are going to win by 3. So
they're saying that they're going to win by more than a touchdown. I don't think so. I think it's going to be less than a touchdown. So if it was 7, I would have been like, okay, that's more. I'll be more comfortable with that, maybe 6. But 8.5, nah, I don't think so.
Yeah, 8.5. It you know, the pessimist in me want to say that that's honestly about right, but as a Niners fan, I don't know if I can take the disrespect like that. I'm just going to be unbiased. I think the 8.5 is actually pretty good. I think the San Francisco 49ers will probably be in this game for a long stretch of it. I think that they have the players to fight. It's a divisional rivalry game. Obviously, anything can happen, regardless of who the players are on the field. I don't know. I think that the Rams will pull away. I think that outside zone run scheme is going to really affect this 49ers defensive line that has been trying to work for trying to work towards getting that pass rush back and that run game defense back. This team is not generating pressures without Nick Bosa. And I think when you have Matt Stafford opposite, you have to get pressure on him. And I just don't see it happening. I think this is honestly fine. I might take the Niners plus 8.5, but I don't know. I think the line itself is it's honestly all right to me. I don't know. Again, pessimist talking, but I don't know. I think it'll be fine. All right. We got a little bit of time left here. Let's talk about the MLB. I don't know if you have the scores in front of you, Jorge, because somehow my phone has just capitulated. So if you can pull that up, the Cubs are playing the Padres right now. I think that's going to be late in the game. In the interim, I mean, I'll talk about this Red Sox game as we are getting close to the time for it to be Red Sox versus Yankees. I wanted to talk, you know, Aroldis Chapman, he pulled a absolute Houdini act in game one, and it was crazy because the Yankees, I thought they were going to score. I thought they were going to get that win in game one. They were able to get on base. You know, they had bases loaded, zero outs. I thought it was absolutely crazy that Aroldis Chapman was able to get all three outs after that. I know a lot of people were like, oh, you know, Chapman is just sitting there. He's wanting to feel something, and that's why he allowed those runners to get on base. But it was an absolutely fiery performance from Chapman to close that game. Fernando Cruz, I thought, also had a good performance late in that game. And, you know, we have Connelly Early and Cam Schlittler going at each other. I think in this pitching battle, I'm probably going to say that Connelly Early has a little bit of an advantage. He played pretty well over these last couple of games when we're talking about the regular season. I think the Yankees, they have guys that can go hit for power. You know, you have Aaron Judge, you have guys like Giancarlo Stanton on this team. But I think year in, year out, we see this team kind of capitulate to capitulate to playing below their standard. Like the New York Yankees are a team that in the regular season, they feel like they can show some power. And now it just feels like it's another stretch where you don't know what you're going to get out of those guys. But we'll see. I think that will be a close affair. All of these games have been pretty close. Jorge, do you have the score of the Padres-Cubs game right now?
Yeah, it's 3-0, and they just finished the eighth. They're going to the top of the ninth. 3-0, yeah. Cubs are up.
Yeah, so if the Cubs are to win, the ALDS and NLDS series are going to be, it's going to be Dodgers versus Phillies, which I think is going to be very, very entertaining. We're going to have the Mariners play the Tigers. I think that's a matchup that the Mariners should be able to win. And then we got the Cubs playing what team is the Cubs playing next? I'm trying to think. Cubs will play, the Brewers. I don't know why that was out of my mind. Yeah, Brewers versus Cubs, that's also another interesting series. I think you get to the part of the playoffs where it is really interesting regardless of the matchup you're going to get. And then we got a all NL, you know, match, or excuse me, AL East matchup between the winner of the Yankees, Red Sox, and the Toronto Blue Jays. Quickly here, Jorge, which team do you think that had a bye in this playoff so far? So we're talking Mariners, Phillies, Brewers, and Blue Jays. Which team is going to have the most chance to be upset?
The most chance to be upset? Let me see. Man, I want to say probably the Marlins. I mean, not the Marlins. the Seattle Mariners. My bad.
I don't know. Yeah, no, it's all good. I'm going to say the Brewers. I think the Cubs can really upset them.
But I feel like the Brewers through the season, they had a pretty good time. They had pretty good moments.
Yeah, for sure.
TikTok.
Yeah, all right. Well, yeah, thanks for listening and watching. For Daniel, who was working the video side of things, for Jorge, who was producing the show back at the studio. I've been Tanvir Singh signing off as we send it to SoFi between the Niners and the Rams. Thanks for listening on ESPN Radio 1430. I'll be back tomorrow. See you guys tomorrow.